Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our Wednesday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host. So glad to have you here with us. Thank you so much for being here with us. I imagine if you're around in the year 1500, it was very hard not to believe in God. And then you get to the year 2018 and people are having a very hard time believing in God. More and more people expressing that they have grave obstacles to belief in God. Well, I wonder what happened in the course of that. Those 500 and something years. Well, a lot happened, a lot went down, and now we are faced with the fact that we live in a society where people face grave obstacles to belief in God, obstacles that can, with patience and intelligence and charity, be removed, but there has to be some willingness on both parts, the part of the person sharing the truth about God and also on the part of the person seeking God. And so our topic for today is overcoming obstacles to belief in God. Maybe there's atheists who have just they got hang-ups about that proposition that God exists, or agnostics who have reasons why they kind of just don't come to a judgment, suspend their judgment on whether God exists. Catholics who are in dialogue with atheists and need some help to overcome their objections. Often, I'm sure those conversations are happening within a family, maybe more than people are used to, more than in the past. Fortunately for us here at Catholic Answers, we have Carlo Broussard, and he wrote a wonderful book called Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And so we just took the first part of that, Overcoming Obstacles to God, and we made it our show for today. Carlo, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Cy. I'm glad it's fortunate for you that I'm with you rather than not being fortunate.
Yeah. Well, not fortunate at dinner time because, you know, another mouth to feed. We'd have more food if you weren't around, Carlo. But other than that, so Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel in the Church. You worked on this book for, I'm not good with numbers, but more than a month.
Yeah. Yeah, it took about, I guess, 7 months to actually write.
Although, you had it all planned out.
Right. Yeah. Although prior to the actual writing of the book, you know, it took some time, you know, as sort of that journey of knowledge you're collecting as you go along. And then next thing I know, I'm like, wow, I got a book here. So let me write it.
Well, we're glad you did.
Thank you.
And you were just telling me, this may be top secret, but you started work 2 days ago.
I did.
On your next book.
I did. I actually sat down, put the date at the top of the manuscript, and started actually writing my next book.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So it does seem like we live in an era that is confronted with a great many obstacles to belief in God. They're not all dumb obstacles.
No,
they're
not at all.
So, am I correct to say that there has to be some will on the part of the person who doesn't believe in God in order to make much progress with them? They've got to have a question, or can we kind of spur them to a question?
Yeah, that's, you know, Cy, I've reflected upon that question a lot, and it's really difficult to, you know, I mean, you can't coerce somebody's free will,
to engage
in conversation. And so it's really difficult to try to attract someone or to bring them into a conversation. I suppose if, you know, one could appeal to your life testimony and being just a trustworthy person and being a good person, a good Christian, then the person will trust you and open up to you and to begin to share with you their concerns about reality and about God and about mankind, etc., and then we're able to engage in a conversation. But if you're asking for the golden nugget, you know, and how to, you know, extract that story out of them to get them to engage in the conversation, I'm still working on that myself. You know, this whole idea of indifference and apathy. I know, for example, a good friend of mine, Matt Nelson, we published his book here, Just Whatever.
Yeah.
He deals with that initial step of somebody being indifferent to the conversation and to try to get them in the conversation. But once we're in the conversation and that person begins to tell their story, well, then once we lend that listening ear and we listen for what sort of obstacles are preventing them from encountering the truth about God, which is what this particular episode of Catholic Answers Live is about, well, then we begin to see what those obstacles are, you know, because somebody might say, well, like, for example, I was on the airplane a few months back. I think we may have talked about this before, but I was reading my manuscript for my book, preparing for a lecture. The lady on the side of me was peeking over my shoulder, saw what I was reading, and began to ask questions about what I was reading. So I was able to tell her it's about my book, et cetera. Well, in the course of the conversation, it came out, well, how do you reconcile the all good God and evil in the world? You know, I can't really...
Oh, so that was her obstacle.
That was her obstacle.
Gotcha.
It was hard for her to... Because she didn't go to church anymore. She kind of fell away from practicing as a Christian. She said, I really just don't know how to reconcile that. So I have a hard time embracing the truth about God's existence. So I was able to share with her some of the things that I point out in my book, such as, you know, well, you know, just very briefly, just because God has the power to eliminate all evil, but he doesn't, it doesn't necessarily follow from that that he's not all good. His permission of evil doesn't necessarily count against his goodness, because it doesn't belong to an all-good God to necessarily eliminate all evil completely. I mean, we don't even apply that principle for us as creatures, right?
Yeah.
Just because I permit my wife inflicting physical pain upon my children when she's cleaning out their bobos, right? Although I have the power to prevent her from doing so, it doesn't count against my goodness as a human being and as a father, because I'm aware of a greater good that will be brought about by my permission of that physical evil. We could also use this example, Si. For example, let's say for argument's sake that contraception is immoral. Now, we as Catholics would say it is immoral,
yeah,
right? But in a conversation with an atheist or an agnostic, we could just ask, you know, for argument's sake, let's say contraception is immoral, gravely immoral, right?
Right.
Is it contrary to the governmental ruler, right, the ruler of the society, is it contrary to the ruler's goodness for him to permit the use not have legal sanction of the use of contraception? He may very well forbid the selling of contraceptives,
right?
But for him to not have legal sanction for the use of contraception, it wouldn't count against his goodness in his permission of that. Why?
Yeah.
Because a greater good would be lost if he were to have legal sanction of the use
right.
of it, because that would violate the intimacy of the sexual act, right,
right,
that belongs to it. And
yeah.
that would be you know, it would be far worse to lose that great good than the evil that is permitted in the actual use of it. So that's just one example of where a person or an individual who has the power to eliminate evil, if he doesn't, it doesn't necessarily count against his goodness. So the permission of evil, even though you have the power to stop it, doesn't necessarily count against goodness. And we can apply the same principle to God. Because he's infinite in power and knowledge, there is no good that he couldn't bring about. And it may very well be the case that there's some greater good that would be lost if he were to eliminate a particular evil that he permits and allows to exist in the world.
And what did the woman on the plane make of that?
Well, she saw how the permission of evil doesn't necessarily count against one's goodness.
Okay.
So that was the philosophical approach.
Yeah.
But then I followed it up with the theological approach and then shared, which is what I do in the book, in one of the chapters in the section on God, and shared with her the light that Christianity shines in the midst of the darkness of evil in the world. Namely, number one, all suffering, all sin, all evil will be eliminated at the end of time when Christ comes again. Christ makes that promise to us. We have good reason to believe that promise, that all will be redeemed, right?
Yep.
And then, of course, Christ reveals to us that he imbues suffering, our suffering in this life, with salvific value. That is, if we suffer in and through and with him. And that gives us purpose and meaning in the midst of the suffering, to know that I can achieve my own salvation in my cooperation with God and his grace in my suffering. And then also be a hero in that I offer up my suffering for the salvation of others.
Yeah.
So that light, although it doesn't totally dispel the darkness of evil in the world, it does shed some light. And a little bit of light is better than no light at all.
Amen.
And of course, you know, she didn't convert on the spot and say, well, you know, well, actually she did say she was going to start going back to church.
Hey, praise God for that.
And that she was going to look up my book and start following me on Facebook and stuff. So, you know, just a little seeds here and there to plant, you know, but preparing the way. Tilling that soil, right? Trying to, you know, whether it's the metaphor is tilling the soil and planting the seed, or the metaphor is John the Baptist, the voice crying out in the wilderness, lowering the mountains, filling the valleys.
Right. Yeah. That woman, what a blessing that she got to talk with you. If that had been me on the airplane, she'd have been like, I'm never going back to church. I don't even know what you're talking about. I do find it kind of sad that you are at the stage of life now where you just go to airports with your book and sit around hoping that someone will talk to you. I think that's very sad, Carla. Other than that, that was a beautiful story. Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church is Carlo's brand new book. Today, we talk about overcoming obstacles to belief in God. Our number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with your calls for Carlo Broussard right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God, to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix. I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host. Today, our topic, overcoming obstacles to belief in God. Carlo Broussard is our guest. His brand new book is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. We've been discussing a little bit of some of those obstacles and why so many people face those obstacles today, Carlo. I just want, before we go to calls, and I'm going to get to your callers, don't worry. If you're not on the line and you'd like to call, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. But you see more and more, you know, I say that you see more and more of this, but maybe there was always this, but it's just there was no internet to get it around to everybody.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of not cynical, but even mean-spirited dismissal of believers.
Yeah.
And there's like little catchphrases and little things that
sound bites.
Yeah, little sound bites, a lot of sound bites. And I imagine that believers probably do the same thing to unbelievers. I don't.
It is true. That is true.
You probably just doesn't bother me as much, which says something about my personality. But what about the person who says, look, Carlo, why are you believing in God? There's no arguments for it. There's just no good arguments.
Right.
So
right.
Just let it go.
Yeah. I mean, you are correct in saying that in contemporary culture, you know, with the advent of the new atheism, there does seem to be, well, there is a bit more snarkiness, right?
Yeah, yeah,
mean-spiritedness
right.
toward believers and the belief in God. Whereas in the past, atheism and religion could engage in a sophisticated intellectual dialogue and a debate without sort of the mean-spirited bickering from either side. And then, but today, it's not just coming from atheists and militant atheists. And of course, I'm not saying all atheists out there are mean-spirited. They're not. There's some very, very
right.
respectful,
yes.
cordial atheists out there.
Many
who
call
just,
the show.
That amen to that, who right. are just interested in the intellectual dialogue. But there are some mean-spirited atheists as well. But the same is true for believers. A lot of times I encounter believers who say, oh, how can those atheists not believe in God? Can't they just look outside and see that God exists? You know,
right.
very
yeah.
negative, like as if they don't have any good reasons to justify their atheism. And I think ultimately the reasons aren't good, but it's not that they're being irrational
right.
in
right.
their atheism. I mean, they've thought through, you know, what they've been given, and they've simply come to the conclusion and saying, well, it's just not good enough evidence for me. And sometimes yeah. they're presented with evidence that's not so good. Sometimes the really good evidence they've just never encountered. So we can't just simply dismiss, you know, atheists right off the cuff and say, oh, they're a bunch of bad guys or whatever. But with regard to the good arguments, well, one of the arguments I present in my book is similar to the second way of St. Thomas Aquinas' five ways in the Summa Theologiae, and that is from efficient causality of a thing's existence. But there's some nuances between the second way in the Summa Theologiae as well as his proof that he presents in his work on being and essence, also known as the existential proof. So I pretty much kind of combine those two. And basically the idea is when we look out in the world of sense, right? We discover certain things that come into being and they go out of being, right? So the tree outside at one time didn't exist. Eventually, yeah. it's going to go out of existence. That tree is a caused entity, right? That tree yeah. was caused to exist by something else. Now, when I analyze that philosophically, Cy, what we say in philosophy is that tree doesn't exist by nature. It doesn't have existence. The
right.
active existence that distinguishes it from nothing, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have it by its very own essence, like a triangle has three straight sides by its very essence.
Right.
The active existence is extrinsic to it. How do I know that? Well, if it had it by nature, well, then there could never be a time when it didn't exist, right?
right?
Just like there can never be a time when a triangle doesn't have three straight sides. Why? Because three straight sides belongs to the essence of a triangle.
Yeah.
So if the tree had existence by nature, then there could never be a time when it wouldn't exist. But obviously, there was a time, and there will be a time when it didn't exist. When it didn't exist, it won't exist, right?
Right.
So we know that that tree doesn't have this active existence by nature. So it's going to have to receive it from something outside of itself, a cause, right? And then, of course, if that cause is like the tree and doesn't have the active existence by nature, it's going to have to receive that active existence from a cause outside of itself. And so what we have here, hypothetically, is this series of caused causes, right? Causes that are caused to exist by another cause. And so what Aquinas and many other philosophers ask, can this series exist, right? This series of caused causes, can this series exist without a cause that does have existence by nature? Like, can there only be causes that don't have existence by nature? And the answer is no. Why? Because if every single one of those causes didn't have existence by nature and thus has to receive it from something outside of itself, well, then none of those causes would exist. Why? Because there would be no source from which to derive the active existence.
Right.
But if none of those causes exist, well, then the tree wouldn't exist. But the tree does exist. So therefore, those causes must exist, and therefore there must exist at least one cause that does have existence by nature. We say in philosophy it has existence per se, right? It's
yeah.
of itself. It doesn't receive the active existence from anything outside of itself. Its nature is to be.
Right.
And so this is what we call ipsum esse subsistens in philosophy, subsistent being itself, and that's what we call God. And of course, we would have to philosophically analyze that concept of pure being or pure existence itself, and then deduce the various divine attributes, absolute unicity or uniqueness. There can only be one. Immateriality, immutability, right? And on down the list to the omnis, the omnipresent, omnipotence, omniscient, omnibenevolent,
right,
etc. So that's what I present in the book.
So existence itself is an argument for God.
That's right. The very fact that the microphone exists, the very fact that you exist, the very fact that the tree exists is our starting point for arriving at a conclusion of a first efficient cause that has existence of its very nature, has existence per se. That's what we call God. In other words, its essence or what it is, mm-hmm, is identical to its active existence, that it is. They're one and the same, as opposed to you, me, and the tree, where our essence is distinct
from
our active existence.
Okay, so overcoming obstacles to belief in God is our topic. Carla Broussard is our guest. If you have obstacles believing in God, you are welcome to call. If the obstacle that you have is not your own, but someone else's, you're trying to help them overcome an obstacle to belief in God, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We start with Robert in Kensington, Nebraska. Robert, you are on with Carlo Broussard. Your question, please.
Carl, first of all, I come from Kensington, Missouri. The question I have, sir, is not really the question I proposed to the gentleman that has me talk to you. But anyway, could you give us some examples, sir, on the conversion experiences from atheism to devout belief, not only just people that have been known, but also biblical examples, please?
All right, so examples of atheists who have converted to theism? All right, well, a few come to mind right off the bat. I know there is a Catholic gentleman, Kevin Vost. We've published some of his books here at Catholic Answers. He's written a ton of books, actually. And he was a former atheist, now become a Catholic, right? And I think he actually wrote a book describing his conversion story.
Right.
You might be able to check that out, Cy, and help us out here. Another gentleman that comes to mind is Dr. Edward Faser. He was a staunch atheist, but as he began rereading the classical arguments for God's existence, in particular the five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas, Ed Faser converted to theism. Now he came back to the Catholic faith, and he's one of the leading Catholic philosophers out there right now. There's also the famous example of Anthony Flew, was a staunch atheist, converted to theism. It was more so a form of deism, not full-blown out classical theism that we would say, God is essence and existence are one and the same, etc. But the idea that there is a God and he kind of creates the world and the world kind of functions on its own without his concurrent activity, right?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, he was convinced of some sort of God out there, converting from atheism. So those are a few that come to mind. Holly Ordway.
Holly Ordway is a professor at.
Wasn't she previously an atheist?
She was. She started.
And then Jennifer Fulweiler.
Yeah.
Those are two females there who converted from atheism to theism, and of course.
And Devin.
Devin Rose?
Devin Rose.
Devin Rose was an atheist as well. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I think I vaguely knew that, but I wouldn't have been able to articulate that off the top of my head.
Well, I can suggest a movie. The movie Convinced is about this very topic. It's a documentary. It's by our good friend
Don Johnson.
Johnson. What's the matter with me? If you want take a look at that movie, you can find it online. Convinced, a fine documentary about people who became believers and in this case all the way became Christians because they became convinced. Does that help you, Robert?
Yes, two more questions, if I may. In terms of the statement in Rome, I think it was, to the unknown God, how is that related to atheism, sir?
The statement of what I missed.
The St. Paul, remember, he spoke about the unknown God.
Yes. Okay. In Acts chapter 17.
Right.
When he goes to Morris Hill there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Robert, that's actually a very good question, because what we see there is Paul is trying to have a conversation and argue based on a common accepted authority, the authority of reason. So rather than appealing to the Jewish scriptures of the Old Testament in order to substantiate his claims about Jesus. He's arguing on the basis of reason, and he's basically saying, listen, you got all these altars to all these deities that you know about, and you got this one altar to the unknown God. So Paul is basically coming and say, hey, listen, that unknown God, right? I'm coming to proclaim him to you. It's the God of Jesus Christ, right?
Yeah.
And so we see there a hint or a practical tip on how we can approach in an age of unbelief, right? We're coming to unbelievers and who might be putting certain things, giving priority to certain things in their lives instead of God, or who might be seeking and inquiring about some reality bigger than ourselves, right? Because some people out there, especially agnostics, might tend toward that, and we want to proclaim the true God to them, just like Paul did.
Robert, thanks so much for the questions. Take a look, see if you can find that movie. You can find it online, Convinced Movie, I think, convincedmovie.com. Don Johnson is the maker of it. It's about people who came to believe in God because they became convinced, which is what Carlo would like to do for you today. If you'd like to talk to Carlo, give us a call, 888-31-TRUTH, right back after this.
Bringing you the truth, Catholic Answers Live.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Would you like to become a Catholic Answers Live parish partner? We need you to help us spread the word at your local parish. We'll give you bumper stickers, window clings, flyers, everything you need to let your parish know about the best Catholic radio show on the air. We want you to partner with us. Email us at calpartners@catholic.com today and become a Catholic Answers parish partner. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett here, your host, with Carlo Broussard, apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God today. It's funny, when we go to the break, I look on social media, everybody's throwing out names of atheists who became Christians or who became believers in God. Somebody said Lee Strobel. For many people, he's one of the most famous. We got to do a wonderful interview with Lee Strobel last year. He's a very a fine man, evangelical Protestant now, right. But started out as an atheist. Then we never gave the name of Kevin Vo's book before we went to the...
Yeah, right? From Atheism to Catholicism. That's the title.
Yeah, and I was thinking, too, of one of the great stories is Joseph Pierce, who he started out as a neo-Nazi and unbeliever, very violent and troubled person. He found the Catholic faith. And Joseph Pierce is one of the great writers in the Catholic world now.
Amen, yes.
He's got a new book coming out on, it may be out already, on the Chronicles of Narnia, too. It'll be fascinating to see what he says. So the stories go on and on and on.
Sure.
Of these, of atheists who became, was St. Augustine atheist or was he kind of, he was just...
Yeah, he was definitely a bad boy.
Yeah, he was not just bad.
Not to say that all atheists are bad.
No, but he
definitely was doubting. He dabbled in it,
right.
You know, and had some problems and made his way. In the Great Confessions, you can read all about it.
All right, so Robert from Missouri, that's what we've got for you. Don't forget the movie Convinced, Don Johnson's movie. And thank you for that call, Robert. Let's go to Tim in Franklin, Massachusetts, listening on 1060 AM. Tim, you are on with Carlo Broussard. Your question, please.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon.
My biggest obstacle I find, I'm 56, I'm a lifelong Catholic. My family's been raised Catholic. And, you know, I've always believed in God, but I've always believed that God put us all here for a purpose. And at 56, I still haven't found my purpose, and it's really starting to eat me up, and it's becoming an obstacle between God and myself.
Okay.
And I could use a little guidance on this.
All right. Well, first of all, Tim, I think I would say that you definitely do have a purpose that we all have, and that fundamental purpose is to, as the Baltimore Catechism said, know God, love Him, and serve Him. Ultimately, Tim, we are ordered toward God, and only in God can we find our happiness. So your ultimate purpose, the purpose that you know for sure that you have, is to become the saint that you're called to be, and to do everything that you can possibly do with the assistance of the church, the grace of the sacraments, the teaching of the church, scripture study, catechism study, you name it, in order to grow in holiness and to become the saint that you're called to be. So your fundamental purpose, brother, is to become holy. My fundamental purpose is to become holy. And we become holy by knowing God, loving God, serving God. So that's something that you have an immovable rock that you can build your life on. Now, concerning what you're going to do in your life, such as you're going to do this job, you're going to do that job, you're going to marry this person or that person, or you're going to do this or that. Listen, brother, there's no cookie cut mold way of figuring that stuff out. God, Tim, gave us intellects. He gave us free will. And God relates to us according to the nature that He creates us with. So God intends for us to use our own prudential judgments, to use our own free will to make choices and say, okay, I'm going to do this job or I'm not going to do that job based upon my reasoning and the evidence that I have and what I think is best for me in my life. And Tim, just know that whatever choices you make and the direction that you move in your life and whatever you're going to do in your life, know that God's with you. God's going to walk with you. God's going to bless you as long as you're doing your part, Tim, staying close to God, using the God-given talents, skills, and gifts, you know, that He's given you. God's going to bless you in the choices that you make. And He may very well, you know, sort of the light in the sky or just let you know intuitively, hey, this is not working anymore. I need to move in a different direction. And so, Tim, fundamentally, we just have to know our purpose is to follow God in whatever way we know how, right?
Yes.
And we have to do our best to do our part to discern God's will and trust that God will guide and lead us. And I think there's some consolation that can be found in that, knowing that God ultimately is in charge, but yet He still wants us to do our part. He's not, you know, the God in the sky writing the letters in the sky saying, Carlo, do X, Y, Z. He wants me to utilize the powers He gave me. And that therein lies a great dignity that He's given us, to be able to participate with Him and cooperate with Him in His providential plan, rather than Him just doing everything for us. What do you think of that, Tim?
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, and it reinforces some of the things I've already felt. It's just that, you know, God walking next to me, He must be, and doing what I'm doing, He must be very tired.
Well, if it's sin what you're doing, then we need to get away from that, right? And we know that. But I assume that it's not sin that you're talking about, but just your daily activities and trying to figure out sort of the concrete purpose and what you're going to do with your life. I would encourage you, Tim, try to find opportunities to serve others, right? I mean, because we need to – one thing that I often think about and that I've learned in my own life experience is that if we focus so much, right, okay, what does God want me to do? What does God want me to do? We kind of turn in on ourselves, yeah. right? And we sort of miss the boat. We miss the point that we just need to turn out and start serving others and do it out of love of God and just let the pieces fall where they may according to God's plan, trying to do our best to discern his will.
Tim?
Yes, sir.
How's that strike you?
I try to serve others, and I try to serve the church, and I'm sorry, I appreciate you guys taking the call so that I could air this out.
Well, Tim,
I need somebody to talk to.
And, sure.
Can I ask you, I want to ask you a very difficult question, but a pervasive sense of meaninglessness can be connected to depression. Have you ever felt that you were depressed?
I don't know if I'd categorize it as depression. I would categorize it as lost. You know,
and do you have a spiritual director or a counselor that you can talk to?
Oh, I talk to my pastor, and the priest, and I talk to my wife and my sisters who are religious. My daughter, God bless her, she's a campus minister. I have people available to me.
Yeah. Tim, one last thing to keep in mind, brother, is know this. We don't walk the journey of faith based on emotions. I don't know if you are or not, but I'm just throwing this out for you to ponder. We don't want to let our emotions and what we feel be our guide for determining whether or not we're with God or lost or whatever. We walk by faith, not by sight, right? And that sight also has to do with just the whole sensory apparatus. We don't go based upon our feelings. So sometimes, Tim, you may very well not feel God's presence, right? But that doesn't mean he's not there with you, giving you the power and the grace that you need to walk your life in harmony with his divine plan.
Tim, we got to move because we have a lot of calls to take when Carlo is on. I'm very grateful for your call, and I'd like to invite you to call back anytime if you like. Also, if you want to get in touch by email, we have our super secret email, which is radio@catholic.com. Do not give that email out to anybody. And call back again, Tim. I'd like to hear more and just have a chance to talk with you again. And please accept my apologies, but we have to move because we got Jonathan in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. And Jonathan would like to talk with Carlo. Jonathan, your question, please.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. My question really has to do with, responding to atheists who, for example, like Sam Harris, who claimed that you don't need God to have a strong moral foundation.
Okay.
And especially that, the claim that, just along that kind of claim. And I know he also claims to, basically that we don't have free will and things like that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's tackle the idea of the claim that we don't need God in order to have a strong moral foundation. And Jonathan, I actually deal with this particular issue in my book. And I present the obstacle as, how can I believe in God or why should I believe in God when I can be a good person, right? So the claim is I can be a moral person without God, and so therefore I don't need God for morality. Now, there are some kernels of truth in the claim that I can be a good moral person without acknowledging God's existence. I mean, because when we look at morality and the precepts of morality and what is good for us, what is bad, there's a certain order of good inscribed within human nature, Jonathan, that we're able to know by the natural light of human reason. So by the natural light of human reason, we can know that it's not good to kill innocent human beings. We can reason that it's not good to misuse our sexual powers. And even atheists will agree to some extent with that. Like, you shouldn't engage in sexual activity without consent, right? That's an aspect of sexual morality that obviously there's more to it than that, and we'd have to talk about it.
But I see what you're saying. You set a kind of minimum there.
That's right, at a minimum there. So there are some aspects of the moral law that even atheists and agnostics and all human beings are able to come to know by the natural light of human reason. And this is backed up in Scripture, Jonathan, just to throw this out there. St. Paul thought so in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15, where he talks about how the Gentiles do what the law requires, even though they don't have the law. And he's referring to the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, because those moral precepts are inscribed on the human heart. That is, there's this order of human nature. We're able to determine what is good, what is bad. And since as human beings, we're naturally necessitated or ordered toward the good, right? We can't choose anything unless we perceive it to be good in some way. Well, then it follows from that that we can arrive at some moral precepts about the natural moral law. And so there's a kernel of truth. I will acknowledge atheists, agnostics can be good moral people and follow the majority of the natural moral law. But here's another point to consider, Jonathan, and I point this out in the book. The natural law also involves our duty to God. So although an atheist or an agnostic can follow some aspects of the natural moral law, the natural moral law also involves our duty to God if he exists. Because if he exists, then we're naturally ordered toward him. So being a good person necessarily involves our duty to worship God if he exists. So fundamentally, the argument kind of begs the question, right? You can only be a good person without God if God doesn't exist. But that begs the question. You're assuming God doesn't exist in order to account for your goodness, right? So you can't use that as an argument against God's existence in any way. But that's beside the point. The point being is that there are some aspects that of the natural moral law that we can follow without acknowledging God's existence and worshiping him. But the natural moral law fundamentally orients us to God. And so it belongs to the natural law that we worship God in order to be a good person. And then finally, Jonathan, I would say this. We might be able to reduce moral precepts and get to this rock bottom of human nature, right? But then fundamentally, we have to ask, okay, well, whence does the obligation come? Because obligation presupposes some sort of necessity binding our will to follow that order of good that we find within human nature. But that necessity is not coming from nature, ultimately speaking, like it's fire necessarily goes up, right? That's not the kind of necessity we're talking about here. It's almost as if there's a necessity that's binding our will coming from something outside of ourselves, right? It can't be myself. I can't bind my own will. So whence does the obligation come? As St. Thomas Aquinas would articulate in the Summa Theologiae, any law presupposes reason, some lawgiver with reason to govern the community. And so if we find this obligation to follow the natural moral law, and it can't come from my human nature, ultimately speaking, it can't come from myself, well, then whence does it come? It must come from some superior reason, some reason outside or over and above human reason that is directing me toward this end to the good and to follow the good that I'm able to discover inscribed within human nature. So fundamentally, nature cannot ultimately ground the moral obligation to do what we come to know it is good. That ultimate ground of moral obligation is found only in God, who is supremely good, as I argue in my book.
Jonathan?
Yes.
Anything?
Yes. Yeah, that's a pretty deep answer. And would you recommend any reading, especially kind of
yes,
kind
indeed,
of
well
to that extent of
Well, I even think I might be able to recommend a book that will come to your house for free. But let's see which direction Carlo's going to go.
Well, I was going to say maybe perhaps, Jonathan, we could send you my book, Prepare the Way, so that you could read through the chapter where I deal with this particular objection in a step-by-step process so that you can read it slowly, because I was kind of scratching the surface here on the air. But I would also recommend Dr. Ed Fazer's work. If you get a hold of his work, he has an awesome blog. But in particular, he has a new book out, Five Proofs of the Existence of God. And in that book, he deals with the relationship between God and morality, saying how ultimately, you know, although we can, by the natural light of human reason, we can reduce morality in some sense to nature and the order of good within nature, ultimately, you're going to end up with a first sufficient cause who is pure existence and pure goodness itself in order to explain the existence of our nature, right?
Yep.
And the order of good with inscribed in the nature. Yeah. So ultimately, morality is grounded in God.
And you said pure existent what?
The title of the book?
No. The you said it's grounded in pure...
The first cause that is pure existence itself,
yeah.
Pure goodness itself.
Okay, I was just checking because that's what I was going to say. it's Dr. Ed Fazer.
Five Proofs of the Existence of God.
Hang on, Jonathan. We're going to send you a free copy if you like. Just hang on and give us your address. We'll send you Prepare the Way, Carlo's brand new book, and get that Dr. Fazer book. We'll be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, Carlo Broussard here. Did you know that you can arrange for me and a host of other on-fire Catholic Answers speakers to speak at your conference or parish event? Here's how you do it. Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com and you'll find all the information that you need to book me or our other great speakers. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our fifth annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there.
We've had a wonderful time going home all enthused.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
Normally, you'd have to root through a dozen different books to get half the stuff I've learned here.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Join us this September 27th to the 30th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. All of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I enjoy the atmosphere and the friendliness of the people. I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
I've just learned so much. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. It's just been so wonderful.
I love it. I want to come back every year.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel." St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Carlo Broussard, our guest. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God this hour. If you have obstacles in your own life to belief in God and you'd like some help overcoming them, 888-318-7884 is the number. Maybe it's not in your own life. Maybe it's a relative, friend, or a family member, a fellow employee, someone on an airplane who'd like just like an answer from you. How can there be evil in the world if there is a good God? If you want some answers that will help you address that person's objections and obstacles, 888-318-7884. The number 888-318-7884. Sandy in New York, listening on 89.9, is up next. Sandy, thank you so much for your call. You are on with Carlo Broussard. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I have a question. I get really frustrated when an atheist gives me an irrational answer, like had a nun crack me on the knuckles when I was a kid, and if that's what God's about, I don't want anything to do with it. And then they joined the Marine Corps. I mean, stuff like that.
Right, right. Well, Sandy, you know, I would be a bit more, I think I would be a bit more sympathetic to that rationale. Obviously, we recognize on the plane of reason that that's just not a good argument. You don't conclude God doesn't exist from the premise, well, a nun was mean to me, right? Or anybody was mean to me. But I think it does point to a very important principle, Sandy, that we are representatives of God, right? And so if we are bad representations, bad images of God, well, then that's going to make it extremely difficult for people we encounter to come and recognize the real God and what he's all about, right? I mean, this happens all the time. If you have a bad parent, you have a bad priest, you have a bad teacher who is a nun cracking you over the knuckles with the ruler, you know, the mode and the manner in which these individuals try to discipline, right, in this particular case, may be flawed and it may be unreasonable. And from that, that individual associates that behavior, that unreasonable behavior, with God and therefore leaves. Now, whether it is actually unreasonable behavior, that's a question we would have to try and answer. I mean, is it unjustified and unjust to corporally discipline a student? You know, I mean, that's a legitimate question we would have to ask and try and answer. But even if, let's just say it is, well, then perhaps the underlying motivation is just punishment in general. Maybe this individual has a hard time recognizing or reconciling punishment in and of itself, whether it's cracking your knuckles with a ruler or, you know, spanking you on the bottom or something. Maybe it's just punishment in and of itself that the individual has a hard time reconciling with God. And so that would be the issue or the obstacle that we would try and have to remove and to try and show, look, no, punishment in and of itself can be, in principle, it's a good thing, right? Because it can rectify and, you know, and balance the scales of justice, right? And retributive justice and bringing order where there is disorder and making right that which was wronged. And so we have to be very careful in how we judge the person who's making the conclusion that he's making, right? Because we don't know for sure which premises this person's basing his conclusion on. There may be some assumptions there that indeed are flawed, but at least we can be sympathetic of why he's making that conclusion. So, Sandy, bottom line is, I would say we need to try and temper our frustration so that we can actually take these atheists seriously and listen to their story and try and figure out, okay, well, why are you thinking that it's wrong for a nun to discipline you? And why would you leave God for that reason? And then in that conversation, we can find out those obstacles and begin helping remove those obstacles.
What do you make of that, Sandy?
I do. I think it's the obstacles, probably unforgiveness.
Well, that is a big obstacle to friendship with God, is an inability to forgive others. If we hold on to that's without question. I wonder how much too. Sometimes I'll say this from my own life, not pointing to anybody else. How sometimes we may have a reason that we give for why we're not following God's plan in our life, and that's the reason that we give is not the exact as what the real reason is,
right?
That we don't really want to live a moral life at the moment, or we really don't want to give up, you know, some substance that we're using. So for now, I'm blaming the nun from fourth grade.
That's right. That could be the mask,
yeah.
Right? Sort of the public reason that he says verbally, but there's something interiorly, a deeper reason why he's rejecting God. And that's something that we can only find out in conversation with these folks.
Okay, Sandy?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that call from New York. Let's see if we can – I don't know if we can.
Well, you know, I would say this before we go to a call here. You know, in conversation, if an atheist would bring up that reason and say that that's the reason, right? Right. Well, we could just simply ask them, well, why do you think that's a good reason? You know, I mean, yeah. What's your rationale for concluding, well, God doesn't exist because right. I was disciplined by a nun or something? Yeah. And get them to try and articulate their own reason for rejecting God and see if they can justify it, see if there are good reasons, you know, for right. their conclusions, and get them to tell their story. And you might be able to find the cracks or the holes in that story and begin scratching where it's itching, so to speak.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for everybody who called this hour. Carla's book is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. It's 15% off right now at shop.catholic.com. 15% off this fine new Carlo Broussard book. Just put in Spring 18 as the promo code. I don't want to hurt your feelings, Carlo, but everything else is 15% off, too. I hope that doesn't hurt. Thanks for another great hour, Carlo.
You're welcome,
I really
brother.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Next time, let's not coordinate our shirts when we're coming.
Hey, man, how about that? Pretty cool.
You just noticed.
Notice.
All right, next hour, exciting conversation we're going to have about the spiritual gifts within the church to help families. If your family is in need of those, that treasury of spiritual gifts, join us next hour here on Catholic Answers Live.